Very few parts of the world remain untouched and unexplored. Even rarer are areas where groups of people live without any contact with the outside world. Today, it is believed that there are less than 100 groups who live uncontacted. But when contact is made with these isolated and remote civilizations, it can result in disastrous consequences. What is up, Iwu crew? Today we are talking about one of these rare indigenous groups, the extraordinary case of a man determined to meet them, and the ensuing tragedy that shocked the world. Let's get into it. John Allen Chow was born on December 18, 1991, in Alabama, but went on to grow up as an adventurous kid in Vancouver, Washington, where he was always out in the wilderness with his family, camping and hiking. Early on, John's sense of adventure drew him to document his outdoor escapades, and he eventually started a blog called Rugged Trail, where he wrote about his ventures meeting cougars, slipping down dangerous cliffs, and eating bright-colored berries to the point of making himself sick. He wrote on his blog that his personal motto was to make the most of every good opportunity today because you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But no one could ever have predicted just how far his sense of adventure would lure him. By all accounts, John was a good kid, though he struggled a bit with making close connections with other people, as well as finding his own identity as the youngest of three kids. In 2008, while in junior high, John went on a school mission trip to Mexico, and so began his passion for missions and a sense of purpose that he would latch onto as a piece of his core identity. Growing up, his role models, who he deeply admired, included the missionaries David Livingston, as well as Jim Elliot, who became famous after he had died at only 28, after being speared to death while preaching in Ecuador to the Warani people. John did more than admire these men. In fact, he sought to be just like them, even to the gruesome end. To fulfill his desires to give back to others, John became a soccer coach and eventually worked at a nonprofit organization called More Than a Game and AmeriCorps. As he grew older, John began to participate in more frequent Christian missionary trips, as he felt the call to spread his religious beliefs across the globe, as well as participate in volunteer work. This internal drive took him to Mexico, India, Israel, South Africa, and Kurdistan. After a few years feeling lost, John finally began to believe that he had found his vocation and purpose in life, and spent almost all of his time volunteering and preaching abroad. Starting in 2015, John spent time on the Andaman Islands in the Indian Ocean, where he discovered what would become his newest passion, something that would ultimately become a consuming obsession. While there, John learned about the nearby North Sentinel Island, where an indigenous tribe known as the Sentinelese lived. In order to understand the extraordinariness of today's case, some background information is necessary. Though extremely rare, the Sentinelese are considered uncontacted, meaning that they live as an isolated group without interaction with anyone from the world beyond their island. Since their discovery in the mid-1800s, they have consistently rejected all opportunities to meet anyone from outside of their tribe. In fact, they are known to respond with violence anytime people get near them, even shooting arrows at planes that fly overhead. Some reports describe the tribe as using deadly poison arrows as part of their weaponry as well. Allegedly, in the late 1800s, British explorers kidnapped a group of Sentinelese who later lost their lives to disease. It isn't hard to imagine why this tribe might be wary of outsiders. Since 1956, the North Sentinel Island has been declared by the government of India to be a reserve. To protect their unique culture and way of life, it became illegal to go near the Sentinelese, and any visit to the island is strictly forbidden. almost no one but their own tribe has ever stepped foot on the island. Passing boats are required to stay 3 nautical miles away from the shore in order to make sure that no one disturbs the tribe. Even photography isn't allowed anymore, and any photos of the tribe were taken before the ban or illegally. In order to deter any visitors curious to have a look at the Sentinelese, an armed patrol frequents the area without disturbing the Sentinelese themselves. Because no one is allowed to go near the tribe, it is unsure even how many of them exist. But guesses say the tribe is made up of between 15 to 500 people. The Sentinelese have fascinated many who are eager to study their way of living, especially since the only known information about them indicates that they haven't evolved their practices beyond what we categorize as the Stone Age. They are hunter-gatherers who use bows and spears, living semi-naked in the forest. There is a persistent rumor that the Sentinelese practice cannibalism, but so far there is no evidence to support this belief. What may be the most fascinating about the Sentinelese is not their refusal to make contact with the outside world, but where they may have come from. As they are considered to be a Stone Age tribe, the Sentinelese may have been living in isolation on their island for over 60,000 years. Or they may have come from a group that chose to leave another area and self-isolate sometime in the past. John began working with the Christian organization All Nations, whose teachings led him to believe that he needed to meet the Sentinelese and convert them to Christianity. The island fell within an area referred to by Christian missionaries as the 1040 Window, also known as the Resistant Belt, which is a region of Africa spanning to Asia where missionaries have difficulty converting people. John spent much of his time as a missionary specifically within these areas, and he had begun to believe that it was his purpose in life to convert as many people in that area as he could. Apparently, John had first heard of the isolated group of the Sentinelese while attending a private Christian high school, but it wasn't until visiting the area that he seemed to become obsessed with meeting them. John soon came to believe that the uncontacted people were the last of Satan's stronghold on earth, as they had not heard of Christianity. He told those around him that he wanted to preach to them to save them. For about 3 years, John obsessed over the tribe, and he started to refer to the Sentinelese as his calling and mission, and claimed that his visit to the island was essential because, quote, "the eternal lives of this tribe is at hand." He only told those who were part of All Nations about his plans, as knowing the many dangers, his loved ones would have tried to talk him out of it. Finally, in 2018, when he was 26 years old, John had secured a plan to contact the Sentinelese, though it was completely illegal to do so, which he knew well. To prepare for his expedition, John got all of the necessary vaccinations and took medical and linguistic training. Even though he did his best to prepare, he never alerted the Indian authorities about his intentions, nor even tried to get permission to go to the island. With all of his experience as an adventurer, it seemed that John wasn't afraid of anything that could happen to him. In late October, he went to Port Blair, near the North Sentinel Island, where he self-quarantined for a few days in a safe house, in an attempt to protect the Sentinelese from disease. This action indicates that John was very aware about the risk he posed to the tribe. On November 15th, John bribed 5 local fishermen by paying them 25,000 Indian rupees to illegally bring him close to the island. At first, the men hesitated, but John eventually convinced them to help him. Yet, when their boats arrived at about 1,600 feet from the shore, they stopped and refused to go any closer. In 2006, the Sentinelese had killed 2 men who accidentally drifted ashore on their island. The tribe had placed their bodies on bamboo stakes on the shore for all to see as a warning. The fishermen cautioned John that he should observe the Sentinelese from the safety of their decks, but John wasn't convinced. After all, he had come this far, and he felt this was his greatest mission yet. Armed with a waterproof Bible, John took a canoe and went to shore alone. Once there, he was almost immediately met with some of the Sentinelese men who approached him equipped with bows and arrows. John reportedly shouted over to them, "My name is John. I love you and Jesus loves you." Though he tried to give the men some of the gifts he brought, they were suspicious and hostile. When they began to string their bows, ready to fire at him, he was forced to retreat back to the fishermen's boats. John was not deterred and tried again right away, this time approaching the Sentinelese while singing worship songs to them and speaking to them in Xhosa, which is a Bantu language. Apparently, they responded to hearing Xhosa with confusion and silence, refusing to engage with John at all. Again, John wasn't swayed and just came back again the next day. During other attempts to make contact, the tribe seemed to be amused by John and would burst into laughter any time he tried to speak with them, especially when he tried to parrot their language back at them. John guessed that they thought he was funny because he was repeating bad words or insults to them. As one of the few people to get so close to the Sentinelese, John's notes in his journal have been extremely helpful for anthropologists curious about how they communicate. John wrote that the tribe used lots of high-pitched sounds and gestures when speaking. For 3 days, John tried everything to make contact and have the Sentinelese accept him, but he was now growing frustrated and disheartened. No matter what he did, they either raised their bows in a threat to him, laughed, or ignored him entirely. But even after so many unsuccessful attempts, John wasn't going to give up. He then recorded an incident with the Sentinelese in his journal where he once again tried to give them gifts, including fish, when one of the tribe members, a young boy, shot a metal-pointed arrow right at John's chest. Luckily for him, he was holding his Bible against his chest, and the arrow pierced into it, saving his life. Prying the arrow free of the Bible, he handed it back to the boy who tried to shoot him. Then John completely abandoned his canoe in fear that the tribe would try again to kill him, and instead swam hastily back to the boat. Apparently, John had predicted this outcome, though, as he had brought dental forceps with him just in case he was shot with an arrow and had to pry it out of his body himself. In his journal, John briefly reflects that he should probably turn back and give up on his quest. One of the main reasons he chooses to continue is the fact that he's lost his passport and can't easily return anyway. He also thought leaving meant that he had failed his mission. Yet, with an awareness about the possible peril he was placing himself in, he wrote, "I think it's worthwhile to declare Jesus to these people. Please do not be angry at them or at God if I get killed. Don't retrieve my body." On November 17th, John told the fishermen to leave while he once again went to shore. He apparently believed that the reason that the tribe had been so wary of him in all his previous attempts were the looming boats behind him. And without the boats there, he might have a better chance making meaningful contact and then converting them to Christianity. It isn't clear what John thought would happen when he was left on the island, but it appears that he may have predicted his doomed fate. John knew the massive risk he was taking, and he was scared, writing in his journal where he spoke directly to God, "If you want me to get actually shot or even killed with an arrow, then so be it. I think I could be more useful alive, though. But to you, God, I give all the glory of whatever happens. I don't want to die. It almost seems like certain death to stay here." No one knows exactly what happened to John. Because it was only the Sentinelese and John on the island, we may never know what actually occurred between them. But what we do know is that the fishermen later returned to the area where they saw the Sentinelese dragging John's body. And the next day, they could see that his body had been left out on the shore before the tribe buried him. With no other choice, the fishermen went to the authorities to report what had happened. All five of the fishermen who helped John were arrested for their actions. John was declared to have been murdered, and a murder case was even opened to investigate. But after lengthy discussions, it was decided that there was no point in arresting or prosecuting the Sentinelese for John's death. After his tragic demise, John's story made international headlines. His choices were highly criticized, not only because it was illegal, but also because his presence on the island could alter the Sentinelese's way of life. John was viewed by the media as an ignorant backpacker, or even an arrogant young man trying to be seen as a hero. One Twitter user even called him a deluded idiot. Attention was brought to the fact that even with his quarantine, John may have unknowingly exposed the Sentinelese to pathogens from the outside world that could be deadly, especially as they hadn't been exposed to anything beyond their island. Exposure to something like the common cold could have easily killed everyone in the tribe. Many people believe that John may have been brainwashed into a delusion, especially considering the fact that John had no real way to have meaningful communication with a tribe that didn't speak any language similar to one that he spoke. All nations responded by saying that John was a martyr for their cause, but John's own father criticized the group for creating such extremism in his son that would drive him to do something illegal and ill-advised, especially as they knew about his plan for years. He calls John an innocent child and blames the missionary community for his death. His father even said that his son had found a not unexpected end with how the organization had trained him. Allegedly, the All Nations training for their missionaries included a mock situation much like the one that John faced, which likely encouraged him to think that he could handle meeting the Sentinelese. The mock training included blindfolding the missionary and setting up an indigenous tribe who were hostile to them by brandishing fake spears to mimic a threat. John's body has never been recovered, but the Indian authorities attempted to get him back on several different occasions where they were met with extreme hostility by the Sentinelese. A few of the times the island was approached, the tribe was seen standing guard on the beach with bows and arrows. It was deemed that the effort was incredibly dangerous for both the Sentinelese and for the authorities. John's body has been left buried on the island where he died. To this day, many look to the tribe's burial of John as a sign of respect and argue that this is proof that their violence comes from a place of fear rather than simply hateful aggression. With the continuing reputation of killing many of the people who've ever dared visit their island, the Sentinelese may be the most isolated people in the world.